My name's Sandy Hickox, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm grateful to be here tonight. I want to thank Bob for asking me to talk. I come to Las Vegas, well, I have been coming to Las Vegas the last couple of years with work, and I wanted to find out where the meeting was so I could get ready for my week-long work, and he asked me to speak, and I'm going, that's not what I wanted to do, but I'm here. And today I had to call him because we got delayed in our flight and all that kind of stuff, and I'm going, oh, my gosh. So I got on capris and in a shirt, and I'm going, well, if my luggage don't make it, I'll just have to tell him to bring a dress, you know. And I'm here, and I'm grateful to be here. I'm grateful for the two people that are with me. They are special people. They got a special place in my heart. And this is their first AA meeting, you know, so we're grateful that they're here. And I put them up front where the sick folks go. My sponsor hadn't let me get off the front row yet, so, I mean, I'll settle down in a minute. I get real nervous because I want to impress you, you know, and I know I'm in a room full of alcoholics, and there's just no way to do that because y'all have drank more than me. You have been in jail more times than me, and some of the women have had more husbands than me, so, I mean, you know. I'm just here to share what happened to me, what I'm like today, well, what I used to be like, what happened, and what I'm like today, and there's a big difference, and I owe it to Alcoholics Anonymous and you people. And I didn't come to AA to get sober. I'd never heard of AA. I'm on my couch, and, you know, there's somebody knocking on the door, and I peep out the window, because I'm always peeping out the window at this point in my life, and there's a cop car out there. Well, that's not nothing new because they're always looking for the neighbor. So I go to the door and they're looking for me. They shove me down in a chair and they go through my house just like they do on TV. Now, I thought that was TV, but it's not. It's real life. They made a mess and they found what they were looking for. I couldn't tell them that the little white pills that they found was what I took when I drank all night so I could stay up all day so I could work. They had it with possession with intent to distribute. I couldn't tell them that reefer that they found was what I smoked when I took those little white things to stay up just so I could work, because, I mean, they'll keep you up for days. It brought me down so I could sleep, so I could get up and go to work the next day. Again, second count of possession with intent to distribute. Well, they found a pistol. Well, I couldn't tell them that the pistol I had was to protect me from the hobos, because I worked on the railroad at that point in my life. And they had that with illegal possession of firearms. And they loaded my butt up and took me to jail. Well, before they loaded me up, I knew I was going to jail because they kept finding stuff. And I couldn't go to jail looking like I was looking because I just come to. So while they were busy, I slipped out the back door. You don't do that. They realize that you're gone, and they come flying around the trailer because I was living under a trailer at the time, and they got guns drawn. And, I mean, it's just like you see on TV, and I'm out there trying to get my pants off the line because I can't go to jail looking like I'm looking. So they bring me back in and they take me to jail. And they keep me there for a considerable amount of time. And this is not my first time in jail. Thank God it's been my last, but it wasn't my first time. And, you know, I just had never stayed to the extent they were offering me this time, you know. And I didn't have any money to pay, you know, I didn't have any money to get out of jail. I didn't have any means to get out of jail. I couldn't call him because she might be home, because he had means and he would come get me. You know, so it took me about 5 days to talk to a deputy to make that phone call in case she was home and answered, you know, and he come and he got me out of jail. And my sobriety date is November the 14th, 1983. Now, this was like September, I can't even remember, prior to that. And this was back before getting busted was fashionable. And, I mean, and you've done prison time, long amounts of prison time, when you got busted with the quantities that I had. And they thought I was selling them, and I couldn't convince them I was just doing them, you know. But anyway, I sat in jail, and finally this man come in and got me out. And, I had been there 5 days. And I sat in this pink room because they had painted it specially for me. The deputy told me that, and I believed him, you know. And I sat there, and I knew for once in my life that I was in a crack, and I couldn't get out of it. I knew that I was going to lose my job, and at this particular time, I was one of the first five women that the railroad back east had hired to go to work for the railroad. And I mean, and it was, you know, that's who I was. I was that job. That's the only identity I had. If you asked me what my name, I would tell you with my job. I didn't have a name. It was all connected to this job, and I knew I was losing that. You know, and I'm in a corner and I'm going to jail and nobody's going to get me out and I'm scared. And while on that jail cell bed, I say, today I know that I said a prayer, but then I didn't know that's what I did. I said a prayer, God help me. I didn't make a deal with God. If you get me out of this one, I'll never do it again. I had done that many times, but that was not the deal this time. You know, this gentleman come got me out of jail and I went straight to the bar. Had to see if I was missed. I mean, my gosh, that was my hangout. You know, and they had heard it, I'd gotten in trouble. The railroad had heard I'd gotten in trouble, and they wouldn't let me come back to work. So I'm sitting there pondering my dilemma because I'm in one. You know, I'm in a corner, and I can't get out. And this guy come knocking on the door. Now, this guy I used to drink and party with, but he had been off somewhere, and we wasn't quite sure where he'd been, but he come back talking in half sentences. You know, we'd ask him to come go drinking with us. He'd go, oh, I'm not drinking one day at a time. We'd say, okay, we'll see you tomorrow. You know, we'd take on off. You know, and he was talking about, you know, he just kept talking in those little phrases, you know, like, you know, except for God's grace and one day at a time and all this kind of stuff that didn't make any sense to anybody. So we just left him alone. And here this yoga is out in front of my house. I'm going, oh, geez, you know, because we didn't like to hang out with him because he wasn't fun and happening and partying no more. He was dull and boring and talking in half sentences and he just crazy, you know. So here he is, and I'm thinking, well, I got that beer in the refrigerator. I'm good. So I let him in. And he said, you know what? I know how you can get your job back. I said, sign me up. He signed me up for treatment. I didn't know that. I didn't have a problem with alcohol. I didn't have a problem with drugs. I didn't have, you know, I'm in a little dilemma, and I can't get out. But this is going to look good on my record because I'm going to go do this little treatment thing. You know how we are. We can play the game for so long, and then we're out of there, right? Well, I can play the game and get out of this little dilemma, and I'll be all right. So they signed me up for treatment. Well, this AA man and these two AA men, these old guys, come to the house and started confessing to me after that. Today, I know they were 12-stepping me, but I didn't know what they were doing back then. They were telling me secrets they should have carried to their grave. I couldn't believe that they were telling me, a total stranger, this. You know, and they were, you know, he said, well, we'll take you to treatment today. I said, no, I can't go today. I'll go on Monday. They walked out shaking their head. And today I understand that. Back then I didn't. On Monday I got my sack packed. I'm ready. I'm going to treatment, you know. Now, I'm not one of these people that send AA messages late at night when you're all fogged up or any of that kind of stuff. I didn't know what treatment was. All I knew was I was going to get out of jail and get my job back. So this same old guy and his wife come and got me. It's an AA and an Al-Anon. They come got me. They're taking me to treatment. Well, this Al-Anon lady's talking to me on the way down there, and I know I made a big mistake, you know, because they're talking about stuff that I just wasn't quite ready to do, you know. And, well, maybe I was until I got out of jail, you know, or not have to go to prison. But this Al-Anon had me scared to death. She's a little bitty Indian lady, dark complected, dark hair, and then black eyes is just mean, you know. And she looked at you like that. And I'm in the car with these people, and I didn't know you could drink before you went to treatment, or I'd have been drunker than Cooter Brown, but I didn't know that. So I mean, my clothes are pressed because I'm going to treatment. So here we go. And I get in that car, and I get real scared, and this lady's telling me all this stuff. And we get down there, and while the AA is filling out the paperwork, this Al-Anon's got me by the arm. She ain't going to let me go because I'm getting scared now. And she walks me down the hall about as long as this building, and she gets to them double doors, and she shoves me through and pulls the door back. Well, that wouldn't have been a big deal if I'd have had a handle on my side, but I didn't. So I'm up there, and I'm at the window. You know, now I'm scared, and I'm really crying because I'm scared. And I mean, I've done those fake tears before and all that, but this was real. I mean, and I don't cry pretty. I blow snot and my cheeks get red and all that kind of stuff. And I'm up there and if that heifer looks back, I got her, right? Because I mean, you can't resist this. So I mean, I'm up there and I'm looking at that, and that heifer walks all the way down that hall and she never does look back. I hated Al-Anons. So I stay in treatment. I'm in treatment. And this lady, I don't even remember who she was, but she carried the message to me, and I hope I never forget it. She said, Sandy, if you do what we say do here, you'll never have to feel the way you're feeling inside ever again unless you choose to. And I'm going to tell you, all my life, I wished I was somewhere else in somebody else's body doing something else. I think I come out of the chute 6 foot tall, which is cool at almost 50, but at like 8 and 9, you look retarded, you know? I'm all feet, you know, and just length. I mean, and when I had my first beer, it put about 40 pounds on me. Well, actually about 20 pounds. It put 10 of it back here and put 5 and 5. And I mean, It made me look like and feel like a girl, and I'd never had that feeling before, and I sought that thereafter. And this lady tells me, you don't ever have to feel that way ever again. I remember when I was like 11 or 12 years old, probably 9, 10, something like that, I'm laying on the bed at my mama's house, and I'm looking out at the full moon, and I wished I was dead. Either dead or somewhere else. You know, it don't matter to me. Just get me out of where I am. You know, and I live most of my life like that. I got a brother younger than me is perfect. I've got a brother older than me that is the ruler of the house because mama raised four of us by herself. And then I got a younger brother that was my baby, you know, and that's the way I come up. Mama raised four of us by herself, and I remember I'm in the second grade, and she's going to work at night, and I'm having breakfast on the table, and my brother's up and dressed when she gets home. You know, and today they call that probably abandonment, you know, because we would stay all night by ourselves. You know, but I hated it. I hated it because, you know, we didn't have the right clothes, and I was always tall and looked like I just jumped in my pants too far and all that, and people laughed at me, and I hated it. I hated it. And every time I took a drink, it took care of that. So I remembered that when she said that. So I started trying to do what they asked me to do in that treatment center. And I got to feeling better. They told me that if I wanted to live sober, I could not keep selling myself like I was doing. So the guy that I called when I was in jail, I had to tell him, I had to make a decision. Either I had to believe in a God that I couldn't see, feel, or touch, or this money man. And I'm going to tell you, when you're looking at going to prison, no job, no money for a lawyer, no nothing, I'm gonna, you know, what am I going to do? You know, because if I keep selling myself, I cannot stay here and live sober. I won't be at peace inside of myself doing that. And I heard that. And I wrote that money man a letter and said, you know, thank you very much, but don't call me no more and don't come see me no more. And I was amazed how God worked out my life. You know, I get out of that treatment, I go to the treatment center and I do that deal, and then they want me to go to a halfway house, which would have been fine, but the halfway house they wanted to put me in was all girls. Now, I come up around a big pack of boys. You cannot chase me nowhere with a bug. I can make a Coca-Cola dance with a pistol. But, you know, how to put on makeup and put all that girly stuff together, I don't have a clue, and they want to send me in a, they want to put me in a house with a bunch of them. And I'm scared to death. You know, and I found out in there that those women, that I was scared of the women because I thought they were doing the things I was doing. And I always heard, don't trust them women. But if, and you couldn't trust me because I was not to be trusted. And that's what I based that on. It wasn't your actions, it was my own. And I didn't know that. In that halfway house, I'd done the first inventory, looking at my part. You know, it wasn't the fact that my daddy wasn't there that I was an alcoholic. It wasn't the fact that my oldest brother was God in my life. That's not a reason I'm an alcoholic. The reason I'm an alcoholic is I got this hole in me that only God can fill, and I don't know that. Because I've been in them churches down in South, and I have had people pray over me and sprinkle me and dip me and dunk me, you know. And I tried to get it, but it just didn't stick, you know. So I just knew that I had crossed that line and was one of those souls you that they threatened me with in church, you know. Hell, gonna be doomed to hell ever after. Well, I was in hell then, and I didn't know it. So I go to this halfway house, and these women started. This halfway house had rules. You had to wear all your clothes. Well, I didn't even own the clothes they wanted me to wear. I mean, because in the life I was living, I mean, you would forget them under the car seat, or they'd get hung up in that thing that let the car seat back, and you get them tangled up and tear them up anyway. And then if you're drunk, you're trying to figure out some of that crap to put back on is ridiculous. So I just quit wearing any of that. So, but now they want me to. So we have a dilemma. So now, to get over this dilemma, I got to ask for help. I'm going to tell you, when I'm up in front of you guys, I hope I don't ever forget that when I come to Alcoholics Anonymous or when I was first introduced to you guys, I didn't even know what size panties I wore. Those women in that halfway house, they took me and they put me in a dressing room and they started hauling panties across the store. You know, and they helped me. You know, and that is what has happened every time I have let you know, hey, I don't know how to do this. Can you help me? You always have. And you've never laughed at me that day. Now, we have laughed about them panties. You know? But I don't ever want to forget that. You know, because we hear in here too many times, if you forget where you come from, you're going to go back there. And I'm going to tell you, I done been to hell. I don't want to go back. Y'all have given me a piece of life that I have never known. And I hope I don't ever take advantage of it or forget it. So I stay in the halfway house until they let me go. Then I get to go home and I'm scared. Because I always know that my friends, all these friends that didn't come see me in jail, hadn't sent me cigarettes, no money, are going to come take me and get me drunk. You know, because I've been taking some of these actions that y'all suggest I do, and I'm feeling a little bit different, and I'm I'm excited about it. For the first time in my life, I think I like a little bit about who I am. And it don't matter that I'm 7 foot tall and 120 pounds. You know, none of that. I'm really not 7 foot, but back then that's my perception. And so I go home, and this Al-Anon lady, well, I'd done forgiven her, you know, and I had written to her, and she, I asked her to sponsor me because I got sober in a little small town, and there was the old guys, and then there was Al-Anon women, and there wasn't many women staying sober. You know, and these old guys, they felt... I had one guy tell me that he wanted me to get sober worse than he wanted to get in my pants. You know, and I'm forever grateful because he did that for me. And I know there's old-timers in this room that do that. They don't take advantage of the sick new women. You know, because I heard a speaker say one time, if you pat her on her head, her pants fell off. You know, I can relate. Because when I got to you, that's all I had to offer. And today I'm more than that. You know, but y'all taught me that I was more than that. This Al-Anon lady got me, I mean, she taught me what women did in the daytime because I didn't know. You know, my oldest brother disowned me when he found me walking the streets of New Orleans, Louisiana, selling myself. You know, and I'm going to tell you, one of the things I did was had to make amends to him for the part I played. Because I had been at those family meetings and stuff like that where he would just look through me like I was a piece of glass and he didn't see me, you know. And that's what my actions get me, the results of my actions. And I had to look at some of that. You know, and I realized I was an embarrassment to him, and that's not the life he wanted for his sister. You know, and I caused him a lot of shame and heartache and worry and concern and all that kind of stuff. You know, and I didn't set out to do that. I didn't set out that morning to do that. I set out that morning to get rid of this crap I got inside of me and this self-hate and this self-loathing, and I didn't know that's what I was doing. So I start going to meetings. This Al-Anon lady teaches me what to do in the daytime. And me and this guy, I mean, back then, you just loaded up whoever had the biggest car. That's the one that took the car, and you went to the meeting. And we drove 30 miles, 40 miles, and we went to a meeting every night. And we knew people half the state of Georgia, you know, because we would go do those meetings. Because it was about giving it away. And if an alcoholic called, we cut the stove off and let the pot set, and we went, and that's what we did. That's what you taught me to do. You know, AA comes first. Because if I don't have AA, I don't have no life. Y'all have given me a life like I've never known, and I hope I don't ever forget it. So I start doing that, and me and this guy start holding hands, for God's sakes. We went on an AA date. Let me tell you about an AA date. I'd never had a date before. Well, not this kind. He comes and picks me up. And we either go to dinner before or after the meeting, go to the meeting, stay the whole time, and then go. He takes me home and he leaves. And the him leaving part was what I didn't get. When, you know, and we get on the steps, and you know, I don't know whether to, you know, kiss him or say the Lord's Prayer. That's an AA date. I didn't see the point. So I'm in the garden with this Al-Anon lady, and I'm all pissed off because this guy hadn't tried to grab nothing or touch nothing that wasn't his, and I didn't understand it. I'm sober now. I'm looking pretty good. I've even picked up a couple of pounds, and I just don't know what's wrong with me. And I'm in there, and I'm slinging dirt, and I'm telling this Al-Anon lady, and she says, well, honey, he's trying to show you respect. I said, respect? Respect to me was he was with you one night, and he come back the next day. That's what I do about respect. An Al-Anon lady taught me about respect. A guy in this program taught me about respect because I didn't have a clue. Because when I come to you, I didn't have a whole lot to offer. You know, and y'all showed me that there was more. You know, and I am forever grateful for that. And this lady, she taught me how to dress because, I mean, I come up around a big pack of boys. My mama cared more about food on the table than she did whether her curtains matched her carpet. We didn't even have carpet. But, you know, I mean, she's a very simple woman. You know, and that's just how I was raised. And this Al-Anon lady took me under her wing, and she showed me those things. You know, and I'm forever grateful that she took time like that for me. You know, but that's what you do here. You take time for me. You take time for that sick newcomer, male or female, coming in the door, and you show them how to live. That's what we do here. That's how I pay back that Al-Anon lady, is take these sick women and do the same thing with them. You know, and I'm ever grateful for that opportunity. Me and the guy that showed me respect, we got married. I even had an engagement ring. We still hadn't done nothing. You know, that was sponsor direction. You know, I didn't understand that either. But, I mean, we did it, you know, because I needed to do something different than the way I had always done it if I wanted different results. And that's what you told me. So that's how I acted. We had a big wedding, and, well, I mean, it was a big wedding to me. I'd never been to a wedding before. Well, I mean, that's a lot. I have been to one. It was through a bag of Quaaludes, but I don't remember. Well, I mean, I know I got married, but I don't, that's all I remember. I had to get divorced from it, but I didn't remember details. So that's what I know about getting married. You know, and this Al-Anon lady and her Al-Anon friends, they'd done all the decorations and they'd done the cake because we didn't have any money. You know, about this time, the lawyer come and said, do you want this court case over? And I go, yeah. He said, okay, meet me at court at a certain time and wear a dress. Well, I don't own a dress. You know, I don't own one. But I got this, well, down south, everybody's got the outfit that they bury folks in the back of the closet. So I got one of them. It's a skirt from Salvation Army or whatever. Don't have no tags in it. It's got a zipper, and I don't know where the zipper goes. That's okay. I got my Al-Anon lady, you know. So I call my Al-Anon lady, and she's not there. So I get her husband. He said, oh, hell, Sandy, just put it in the front like we do our pants. So that's what I did. I turned that zipper in the front of that skirt, and here I go to court. I can't imagine what I look like. That may be the reason I didn't do jail time. I look so pitiful. But I'm sitting there and I'm shaking like a dog with persimmons or whatever. And I'm, you know, and I got my chip in my pocket. And you know what? For the first time in my life, I am willing and able to be responsible for my actions. And if God wants me to go to jail, I'll go to jail. I'm not sitting up here. I mean, I was standing up here telling you I wanted to go to jail because I did not. But what I realized, what I had to be responsible for my actions for the first time ever. And if prison was that, that was it. And I'm sitting up there and I'm good to go. You know, I'm good to go. And I don't wind up going to jail. Now, I don't know what I wind up doing, but it's not jail, because they talk a lot of that lawyer gibberish, and I don't understand any of it. But I just know that I'm not escorted out by the cops. And I sit there, and I know that God is working in my life, but I can't fathom it. You know what I mean? Because by all rights, they should put me under the jail. I mean, because like I said, I was looking at a lot of time. And I got away with first offender's probation. And that is, if for those who don't know, I mean, you act clean and then you don't have to do your time. And then my record is expunged and it's not on there no more. So that was a good deal. So, you know, that's Alcoholics Anonymous. Just be willing to tell the truth. Be responsible for your actions. And sometimes you don't have to go to prison. Sometimes you do. But in my case, I didn't. And I was forever grateful. I had this probation officer and he watched me get sober. He watched me get married. He watched me build a house. And when he had women that were having trouble with drinking and stuff like that, he would call me because he had seen what y'all done with me and figured, well, it ain't gonna hurt, you know? I got to tell you about a couple of amends. My oldest brother, I've already shared with y'all the last time how he found me and how he disowned me and all that kind of stuff. Well, I want you to know that after I looked at my part in that and recognized that, you know, that I just really shamed him and made amends to him and told him that I just loved him, you know, and if I'm a part of his life, fine. If not, that's okay, too. You know, but I'm trying to do different today, and if there's any way possible, I would really like to make amends for that embarrassment. You know, and I walked away from there free. You know, I had just made him God in my life. His approval meant everything to me. And I paid a high cost for that. And because of that, a man and stuff, he walked me down the aisle and gave me away at that wedding. That is the life that you give me. I don't have that of my own. Taking the direction that you tell me to take and taking the actions that you suggest for me to take, I get different. My life changes. I don't do the things I used to do, you know? And I'm blessed with you guys. So we get married. 5 years married, and we walk off in the sunset and burn up. You know, I realized today, and hindsight is always 20/20, right? But I realized today that I tried to make his God my God. I wasn't honest in that relationship, and it didn't last. I mean, we were the AA couple. I mean, we were both young and sober and, you know, involved and happening, and we would hold hands going in the meeting grinning. And get in the car, we'd snatch him hands back, and we'd draw that line down the middle, and nobody crossed, and nothing was ever said. You know, that's not the sober living that you tell me about today, or that I have experienced. And at this phase of my development, you know, I'm kind of like Tarzan going through the trees. I won't let go of one vine until I got a firm grip on another one. And that's not the way to leave a marriage, but that's the way I left that marriage. And I'm going to tell you, all hell broke loose. There was no principles or personalities in that meeting. Well, yeah, there were, but they were all against me because I'm sober in Alcoholics Anonymous and I'm a whore. You know, and I didn't think you could get there from here. You know, and I had people, I mean, they didn't want me in the meetings after all I'd done to him. And I'm going to tell you, had it not been for Narcotics Anonymous, I don't know what I'd have done. Because I went to Narcotics Anonymous meetings, and that's where I was able to go and get some form of recovery where they didn't know me, you know, and there wasn't that judgment, there wasn't that line drawing and all that kind of stuff. 5 years sober, you know, I'm not thinking about drinking because drinking is not an option for me. But I tell you what, I certainly wanted to blow my brains out. And I had the gun by my side, and this old guy, let me tell you about him. Lordy mercy. He was new to the area, and he come in, and I'm straight out of treatment, and I'm an alcoholic and an addict. And I would tell you that from the podium, and he would scream about his hemorrhoids in the back of the room. What's that got to do with anything? I mean, every time I said, my name's Sandy, I'm an alcoholic and an addict, he'd scream about his hemorrhoids. You know, I knew that some of these old guys were just nuts, and I knew I'd found one, but... But anyway, this old guy, finally I asked somebody, why does he do that to me? Well, Sandy, let me tell you. If you're an alcoholic and anything else, you're saying you're different from us. And if you're different from us, what we do here might not work for you. Why don't you get in Bill's story and see if you can identify why he failed? Not about his job, not about anything else, how he felt and where his drinking took him. So I did that, and I could identify with Bill because I wanted to commit suicide and I didn't have enough guts. You know, I remember people talking about my drinking, and I wouldn't have nothing to do with them no more. I mean, Bill says it in bigger words, but I mean, that's the gist of it. I remember about the prejudice of the religion and stuff like that, and the upbringings and stuff. I had all that, you know, so I could identify with him. So I go back to the meeting, I'm laying in the gap waiting on that old guy. My name's Sandy, and I'm an alcoholic, and I listen. I have y'all know I got the power to cure hemorrhoids. He didn't scream about his hemorrhoids anymore. But, you know, I hated this man. I would pray. I hated him. He was one of those old guys that tell you the truth, and even though you didn't ask him. You know, and I hated him. He taught me how to pray, because I would pray that SOB would die every week coming to the meeting. Because he had to drive 30 miles. So I'd pray he'd have a wreck. I would pray for him. He taught me about principles before personalities, because he was not going to run me out of my chair. You know, and then I prayed for him to die. So that's how I learned how to pray. I don't pray like that, not much anymore. I don't pray for many people to die, I've got to be honest. And it's not as long as it was with him. But anyway, you know, this guy, if you'd give me 5 minutes, I would tell you what a SOB he was and how I hated him and all that kind of stuff at a drop of a hat. Now, when I'm thinking about eating this gun, I think about that old guy. Because he always loved me enough to tell me the truth. He was the one that didn't want to get in my pants and wanted me sober. You know, but I mean, I had hated him and talked so bad about him, you know, but I knew that I was going to die that night if something didn't happen, and I picked up the phone and called him. He did not recognize my voice because I was so upset, and he said, honey, he didn't say, you can't, just don't call me because you said. He didn't say, don't come over here. He said, baby, get in the car. You know, and the one thing I've learned here is I got sober feet. They'll carry me where my head won't. And I got in the car. And I went over there. And that old guy, he just opened up his arms and I just fell in him. And I didn't have to die that night. You know, I've heard that there's two bottoms in Alcoholics Anonymous. One that brings you here and then one that keeps you here. And I think I'd found that. This old guy, he taped conferences all over the Southeast. And him and his wife, they made room in their car for me and let me go. And I heard people from the podium, you know, talking about being divorced and program and how they had to take principled actions. And this old guy said, you can't say nothing about that guy. If you want to talk to anybody about him, you come to me and quit talking about it. And I did that. And I started taking the actions he suggested I take, and I got freedom from that. We were at a district meeting the first time I saw this ex-husband, and he come in, and there was a hush that fell over the room. They knew all hell was freaking break loose. You know, and I walked up, because y'all had taught me to do this, I walked up, stuck out my hand, and I said, I'm glad you're here. I did not say I was glad to see him here. I said I was glad he's here. Because you see, he's an alcoholic just like me. And if he can't safely come into this room, it may mean death for him too. And I need to think about that. And I tell you what, today when I have friends and everything that go through divorces, you're not going to talk to me about her, and she's not going to talk to me about him. You know, you can talk to me about you, because I love both of you, and I'm just not going to do that, because I have been in that spot, and it's not pretty. Well, my vine come in, and he left, and we know that that happens. But I tell you what, it made me look at me one more time, and one more time in my life, I'm putting men in front of God in my life, and that's not a pretty spot. It wasn't for me. It made me suicidal. So I asked God, you know, that if he would just let me live another day sober, I would do absolutely anything he asked me to do. And I continue to do that on a daily basis. You know, and he's brought me here. You know, I've had people say, well, how do you get to speak? I said, well, I don't screen my calls. And I say yes to AA commitments. You know, and that's what y'all have taught me to do here. I got my job back with the railroad. They offered the settlement for your seniority. I took that money and I went back to school and I got a little accounting degree at a vocation a vo-tech school. And then I got a job. Well, I applied for the job and see, I had to be honest. Because there's one little question on that application I can't answer. So I'm wanting to lie. I am wanting to lie like a rug. You know, because this is an office job. I mean, this is not a job on the streets it's an office with your name on the door. I remember so many times trying to get into, if I ever got to him, I had the job. It's getting past her that was hell. You know, the lady behind the glass, the one with the pretty fingernails and the hair all foo-fooed up, and that speaks perfect English. You know, it was that kind of job. It was that kind of job. And I wanted to lie. I wanted to lie so bad because I just know that if I tell you what about me, that you're not going to let me have that job. So I called this old guy and I said, what do I do here? He said, Sandy, he said, you have always done things your way, and where'd it get you? I said, well, I almost got me in prison. He said, then why don't you just be honest and let God put you where he wants you to be? He said, go in there and ask that man, the interviewer, how he wants you to fill out that application and do what he says. So that's what I did. And I go in there, I said, we need to have a talk. I mean, I am like 1 month coming off first offender's probation, and then my record would be expunged. It wouldn't be there. But if they don't search it, I mean, if they don't check it, I'm good to go. But if they find it, then they're going to get me as a liar. So I said, this is where I'm at. I'm sober about 4 or 5 years, whatever it was at that time. And I said, this is my deal. And I said, I thank you for the opportunity to interview. And before I got home, I had that job. Anytime I walk through the fear and am honest and ask God to take me where he wants me to be, I am always impressed with what he does with me. He got me a job and I didn't have to worry about dressing up in foo-foo stuff because I had uniforms, you know, which was perfect for me. There was a lady in there that was Martha Stewart this size. She knew how to do everything and she helped me. Along this phase, you know, I'm getting asked to speak some, so I would get all the clothes that I'm going to speak in, I take them in there, and I lay them out on her desk, and I say, okay, what do I do with this? Because I don't want to look. I want to be an attraction of Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to dress up and clean up and represent AA and the good life that AA has given me. I don't want to come up here dressed like I just come off the streets of New Orleans. You know, and she knew how to put all that stuff together, and she knew how to do it cheap, which was good because I didn't have any money. You know, and she started helping me put those things together. You know, and that's what happens here. Anytime I ask for help, I always get it. And we have joked about that and laughed about that. And I stayed on that job for 15 years. I got the job, and I stayed there for 15 years. I showed up when they started, and I got off when I was supposed to. I took an appropriate lunch, and I worked every day. That's what y'all taught me to do here. Pumping gas, and I'm in this nosy neighbor says, I know a guy you need to meet. I said, back up, Jack. I don't know how to do that guy thing. I don't know how to do relationships. I'm selfish and self-centered. I want everything my way, and I want it right now, and that don't make for a long-lasting relationship. And I just didn't give it up. And she said, no. She said, this guy's really nice, and he needs you. I said, well, I'm a had dad. You know, so I said, okay, you can tell him to call me, and I drove off. I didn't know he was a telephone man because I didn't give her my number. So this guy called, and I done made up my mind if he was ugly or weird or anything, I'm going to just lie and get out of there and make amends later, you know. And that guy, I'm serious. I put on a pot of coffee, and we live 2 doors apart from each other. And this guy come up, and he sat down. And before we knew it, it was 11 o'clock, and I had met a friend. And I knew, you know, he was just a nice guy. He was the nice guy that I never would deal with. I would never hang out with because I didn't deserve it. You know, if you were beating me up and hawking my stuff, then we got it going on. But, I mean, if you're nice to me and opening my door and treat me like a lady, I don't deserve that either. But, and I got scared in this relationship because I started really liking him because he is a nice guy. And I know because of who I am that if I keep doing what I'm doing, there's going to be another string of dead bodies, and I just don't want that. So about 2 months in our relationship, and I didn't fall in love with him because he was so nice and caring and gentle and everything that I'd ever wanted in a guy. And I told him, I said, you know what, I got to do some looking at me. And when I get that done, if you're still available, we'll talk. But, you know, and I told him that I didn't know anything about a relationship. And I'd done an inventory like I had never done. I looked at my part in past relationships. I'd looked at how I had not been honest in past relationships, how I'd used and abused people. You know, I looked good on his arm or her arm, but it wasn't nothing inside of me. You know, I needed something inside of me. And I asked God to take me to a different place. I wanted God to make me a better woman. I wanted to make me whole where I didn't need him to be okay. You know, and that prayer was answered for me. And we had not seen each other for about a month. And one day I woke up and I knew that I knew. I knew that I was okay. Just in and of myself, I was okay. And I didn't need no man to make me whole. And that day he called me. Now, he had not called me up until this point. Now, we're living two houses apart. And he said, I need to talk to you. And I said, I need to talk to you too. And we have been together since. I told him when he asked me to marry him, I said, I'll marry you one day at a time. I've been married forever three times, till death do us part for three times. I'm not doing that again. It don't work. But I tell you what, I can act like a kind loving wife one day. I can. No matter what's going on, I can act a kind loving wife one day. Now tomorrow I might divorce him, but not today. Today I'm going to act like that way. And I'm going to tell you, we'll celebrate 12 years June 2nd, one day at a time. I told him when I met him that AA comes first, non-negotiable. He said, okay. But I don't think any of us realize what that entails. Because he's sitting home a lot of nights by himself while I'm working with newcomer women. You know, because at that time, I'm starting to look different. You know, I'm starting to act different. This old guy sponsored me for a while, and I know that there's time for me to get somebody else to sponsor me. And I want a woman to sponsor me, to guide me through and all that. And nobody in my area will touch me. I think my reputation preceded me. But anyway, I heard a tape from this lady, and she said her first and last name from the podium. And she said that she knew she was she either had to get in AA or get out, and I knew I was there. And it took us a couple of days to hook up because this lady was in California. She used to go to the Bellflower Big Book group. And I asked her if she'd be my sponsor, and she said I would be honored. She said, honey, how many meetings are you going to? I said, well, one. Well, that's fixing to change. And then she gave me the list, you know, the list of her rules. I'm supposed, you know, go to 4 meetings a week, and I'm supposed to wear a dress to my home group, and it's not about me. It's about being an attraction for the newcomer. It's about scheduling a time to every week to touch base convenient to her. Now, I thought she'd be my sponsor. I could call her 24/7, you know, not this convenient to her crap. But I said, yes, ma'am, to her. And I started calling her once a week. She carried me through the big book over the phone. I did my third step with her over the phone. I did my fifth step with her over the phone. This lady sponsored me a year and a half before she ever met me. And I'm going to tell you, I changed. She softened me up. She showed me about Alcoholics Anonymous. She told me about commitments and about being an attraction for the newcomer. And then all these girls started coming to me, wanting me to sponsor them. And I started doing that, and I got the results of that. You know, it's amazing to me. We were talking about it, you know, during the break. Is this one mine? Thank you. I get hot. Sorry about that. But this lady showed me, you know, that it's not about me. It's about helping you. And in helping you, I help myself. I go to a meeting one night, and I'm fussing about this big old nice house I live in, and I'm picking up a newcomer. And I pick up this lady. She's got three kids, and they're living in the garage, and there's no running water. I'm going to tell you, when I got home that night, the house looked different to me. You know, that's what y'all give me here by being of service. Me and this guy got married, and he lost his job. And I'm going to tell you, you know, I'm real spiritual as long as bucks is coming in. Take my money away and you find out how really spiritual I'm not. You know, and I got full of fear, and we started having to sell the toys because we couldn't pay for them no more. You know, and I had to start asking people for rides to the meetings because I didn't have gas money, you know, because he didn't have a job. He was out every day looking, but he couldn't find a job. He wrote up his resume and put it on monster.com, and a place in Idaho picked him up. Now, Idaho, Iowa, where's that at? I mean, I quit school. So he got the map out and showed me where we were going. And we moved to Idaho. I'm 15 years sober when that happens, and I'm scared to death because I've heard the tales. You know, people move and they don't do it right and all that kind of stuff, and they wind up getting drunk, and I'm scared. So I get these two ladies' phone numbers out of the directory. I say, okay, this is who I am. I'm coming in your area, and this is the day I'm going to get there. And if you don't see me in the meeting in a week, come get me because I won't have sense enough to get there by myself. And they just laughed. I'm going, I'm serious now. You got to promise me you do this. And I don't know who these people are I'm talking to. I've never met them. Okay, Sandy, we'll do that. Okay. And I mean, every week I would call them. Now, I'm really coming this date, and if you don't, you know, and they just, yeah, we'll do that. And they didn't have to do that. But I tell you what, I knew who they were when I got there, you know. And I looked for a job, and I can't find a job and all this kind of stuff, so I have to go to this temporary agency, right? Well, in this temporary agency, this job I'm applying for, they want to do like a security check background thing. I'm going, oh, shit. What? I mean, I'm good with everything that I know of. What if there's something I don't know about? So I have to go in and confess to this lady. Okay, it's not about the job, but if you find anything on there that looks bad, you need to tell me so I can clean it up because I'm sober in Alcoholics Anonymous and all this kind of stuff, and I've been sober a long time. But you need to do that for me, whether I get the job or not. And you know what? I got the job. I passed that security thing. I couldn't believe it. I sweated bullets for weeks, though, because I was scared, you know, because maybe there was something really I didn't know about. So at this time, I'm speaking in some places, and I got to go, you know, I've heard tales about Idaho and some of the people there, and I'm scared to death because I've got a list of speaking engagements and I'm new on the job, and I got to go talk to the owner of the company about this and ask time off. Now, he don't know I'm an alcoholic. He don't know anything about that. He just knows I show up and I'm happy to be there. He come by my desk one day and he said, you know what? He said something about me being happy. I said, I've had bad and this ain't it. You know, and I have, and we have. You know, and sitting in an office with air conditioning running around, all kind of pretty stuff is not a bad day to me. You know, it's not anything like the streets of New Orleans or any of that crap I'd ever lived through before. You know, but I'm scared. But I know that y'all have told me that God never takes me to worse. He always takes me to better if I'm honest. So I go in there and I got to talk to this guy and got to confess, you know. So I talked to him, and I got my little list typed up of where I'm going and all that kind of stuff. And I said, I need to talk to you about some time off. And he said, well, how much time off do you need? I said, well, just a Friday here and there. He's looking down my list, and he's looking at all these places. He's going, you know, he's going, Sandy, what is all this? I said, I'm involved with a nonprofit organization. He said, okay, what kind? Oh, shit. So I go, okay, God, I'm just going to be honest because you've never taken me to worse. And I said, well, I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And because of some of the things that's happened to me or my gift of gab or something, I don't know, I get asked to speak sometimes, and that's what this is. And he looked at me, and I'm scared to death. I know I'm fixing to get fired, right? You know, and he looks at me, and he says, Sandy, he says, we just make Bibles here. He said, you just go and you do with my blessing. You know, that's what happens every time I'm honest, and I'm willing to walk through that fear that paralyzes me at the door. And just going in and be honest. And he's here. He and his wife own the company that I work for. And I'm grateful to you guys so much because they support me in this. They've been putting up with me for 6 years. And I'm grateful. Thank you. And, 2 minutes. Okay, well, I guess I'm done. I'm grateful to be here. Bye.